This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy, Episode 12, for Thursday, June 18th, 2009, Ankle Deep. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outoflinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours Greenwich Mean Time. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line After Hours in the iTunes Music Store.
Well, welcome everybody to another edition of Out of Line After Hours. We got the regular crew here, Jason Vines. Jason, say a few syllables so on the podcast version people know whose voice is yours.
This is my voice, the strong voice. The voice against you, John. Gary.
And Jason will do a whole bunch of different voices during the show, too, probably. And Peter DeLorenzo.
Hey, John.
And Peter, talk about this racing car that you're sponsoring. Tell us a little bit about that. And maybe, Ben, you can bring that the picture of that up.
A buddy of mine, Tim Gaffney, is going to be at the June Sprints this weekend at Road America. So.
And Road America, very different for... The sprints being there?
Well, the SCCA runoffs are going to be there in September. June Sprints is traditionally one of the biggest SCCA races of the year. So we have a lot of Auto Extremist readers up in, that go to Road America. So look up Tim Gaffney. Look for his black Formula Continental car with the Auto Extremist on the side, and he'll be glad to hear from you.
Cool. And then we've got Mark Lenave here, in charge of all, if I got this right, sales, marketing, advertising at General Motors.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here, John. See you again.
It's great Jason, having you here.
See Jason and Peter.
And what a time, man. Have you ever thought that your career would bring you to what you've been going through at GM?
No. I mean, I tell people all the time, but I'm starting to lose, because we're working so many hours, I'm starting to lose track of the time a little bit. But even a year ago, if you'd have written, if you wrote a book with this in it, no one would have believed it, even a year ago. So it's been unbelievable.
It has been unbelievable. Let's just start jumping into stuff because we got so much to talk about. What do you make of being told you got to get rid of all these brands? I mean, on one hand, it's got to be a relief. On the other hand, I mean, a lot of effort's gone into trying to build those brands up.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been asked that question over the years 1,000 times. You know, don't you think you need fewer brands, and why do you have so many brands, and why so many dealers, and all these things? And I mean, you know, I really believe what I said is that brands are an asset, and you know, you'd rather have more than less, but that only works if you can grow them. Brands don't play defense well. They're either moving forward or they're declining to some extent. And if you can't afford to invest in our business, great products with a regular cadence that really meet the brand identity, and you can back it up with you know, adequate marketing resources and a dealer experience that pays off on it, unless you can do all those things, then you have too many brands. And through the process of our restructuring, we looked at every brand, every model. We looked at everything, you know, by ourselves in conjunction with the U.S. Treasury Task Force. And We got the determination that the four brands and three channels was what we could afford to do and do right.
And they were trying to tell you to get rid of GMC, right?
You know, that was really...
Not for very long, though.
No, well, here was the real case. They questioned... They did due diligence on the company. In effect, looking at it like they were buying the company. And in effect, they were, okay? So they questioned everything. They questioned Chevy. They questioned Cadillac. Yes, they questioned GMC and Buick and Pontiac. And they questioned everything. And the exercise that we were going through was in the formation of this restructuring, you know, what is the right, you know, can we have a profitable business with Pontiac? We kind of figured in the end we couldn't get there as much as we all love the Pontiac brand. We couldn't find a way to make Saturn profitable. And, I mean, we had 80 million different ways that we tried. And we just did part of the restructuring. You couldn't afford to do that. But more important is the thing I mentioned earlier, is that you really look at what we can expect for share, outlook for the industry, the pricing environment in the industry. It's really four brands that we could afford to do and do right. And we've got terrific plans for those four. I can tell you that. And you're starting to see it play out with the I saw a new Camaro in the parking lot. And
yeah, I'm test driving that.
The new
yeah.
Equinox, I looked at the whole ad campaign for it today, and 600-mile range. Think about that with a crossover. Fill it up, and you go 600 highway miles, 32 miles a gallon. Nobody can touch it, and they're just going to keep coming after that. And that's the way you do it. If you got to go 20 years without a new product, like Saturn kind of did, that's not how you build a brand in this yeah. business.
So let's talk about some of the news that just broke. Literally this afternoon, you guys have given 60 dealers back their franchises.
Yeah, we...
LaNave Motors Orlando, LaNave Motors Boulder.
Man, Jason, you could tease me just about anything tonight except the dealer reduction. I tell you, that's a sensitive subject. And, you know, this has been, let me tell you guys, it's been painful to go through. And a lot of these dealers.
At least you guys are handling it better than Chrysler did. Mm-hmm. I mean, well, they just yeah. flamed their people.
Right.
You're giving them what, like a year to wind down?
Well, they really can take as much time. They can go out earlier, but then go all the way to the end of October next year.
And then you're giving them $1 million, or,
no,
or how does that
there's
work?
There's a formula of financial assistance based on how much inventory they have, and in an offset of about 8 months of their fixed costs or their rent. And it could be $1 million. There were a couple dealers who were over $1 million. It could be there were a couple dealers who were $5,000 because they, you know, had one car and
you're
stuff.
Giving them 10 cars. Is that right?
No, the dealers that are in wind down aren't receiving new vehicles. If we have some emergency situation, a sold order or something, we'll take care of it. But we felt it was better for them and for us that instead of getting that inventory back, that they wound down their operation, sold their own inventory, sold their vehicles to parts. And, you know, and had a chance to transition their business. And not all of them will go out. Quite a few of them had non-GM brands in the same store that they'll be just fine without us. Some of them have just tremendous used car operations, and they'll figure something out. And a few will find other franchises, quite frankly, that'll go in there. But it's been painful. It's been highly publicized. It's been misinterpreted. In some areas, and
what, do you
what
mean
we
misinterpreted?
Did, well, that we think
the politicians who think you're getting back at them by closing dealers
right.
in their districts,
right?
Who voted Republican?
Yeah, it's gotten politicized in that regard, but it's also too that we like. I got to know from somebody today. The dealers aren't the problem, I have never said they were the problem. In fact, I'm on record, and many have been quoted. They're not. They didn't cause our problem. But if you think about what you talked about earlier. We're restructuring the brands. We're restructuring our entire manufacturing footprint. Got a competitive labor deal now. We've taken out tens of thousands of salary people. We're wiping out layers of management. There's going to be big changes in the executive ranks. Cleaning the balance sheet.
Are you going to stay?
Well, I certainly hope so. You know, because let me tell you, high school coaching high school football doesn't pay as well, okay?
That's the biggest bunch of crap in all of this. He leading the sales and marketing, you've been working with your dealers over the years trying to reduce the dealer count because they want to do it. We've talked about this. They want more throughput for every store. They want to get to a Toyota model. Same at Chrysler, same at Ford, and then to cry foul. These guys handled it pretty well. The Chrysler guys didn't because the Chrysler guys were forcing the dealers to buy cars in February and March and April, and then they pulled the wool, the rug out from under them, and these guys are screwed. You guys worked with them. They just said, now, the other bad news, it's really not bad news, those 42,000 cars that were unassigned at those closed dealers, they're gone. They went to other dealers. I came down Telegraph Road in Southfield on the way here. Bruce Campbell Dodge, a good guy, lost his dealership. There are no cars.
They all got moved.
There's no cars. There's maybe 10 cars and they were all used. So it's not the Armageddon that a lot of people thought it was going to be. And a lot of the trained technicians, we have a shortage in this country of trained technicians in dealerships, whether it's Toyota or GM or whatever. They'll find jobs if they're good. So it's not 42,000 jobs lost now.
Yeah, when business picks up too, a lot of the dealership employees from the closed stores will get picked up. And in fact, we're working right now on setting up, lack of a better term, a GM version of Monster.com to try to help, you know, have a resource. And I'm sure Chrysler will go in with us and you know to have a resource for placing these people. But we decided we were going to go on a performance metric The optimal number of dealers actually below where we're going if we really want to match up with the competition. We didn't think that was right to arbitrarily cut them, so we used a performance metric called our dealer performance score, DPS, that they're used to seeing. It's not a new metric to them. It's a 50% weighted on sales, 30% on CSI, 10% on profit, and 10% on working capital. And at, under a certain level, those dealers got wound down. Above that level, the dealers stayed. And the reversals that we did were primarily a guy just missed, and he put $1 million into the store in working capital that we didn't know about because it, we didn't have clean data when we gave him credit for the million to push them above. It was things like that. And we wanted to have a review process because this is big, important stuff. And, 6,000 dealers, we didn't assume we were perfect and had it all exactly right. So hopefully we caught them all. But it's been a tough process. I'll be happy, be quite frank, when we're kind of through it.
What's going to happen to your market share in the sense that, you're getting rid of four dealers or four brands, excuse me. I think what you're keeping still accounts for, 75% of GM's volume?
About that. Actually, about 80, and it was about 93% of our profit.
Mm-hmm.
And, which kind of gets you to the conclusion where we got to.
But, right now you're tracking for the year just below 20% market mm-hmm. share in the U.S. market. Now you get rid of four brands. What's that drop you guys down to?
Well, the four brands on a retail basis accounted for about 2.5 to 3% of our market share. So, theoretically, if we lost it all, we would be a 17% share. And our viability plan, which is a matter of public record, it's built on 18.5% share. So, we feel like we need to recover at least half that share of those dealers lost. We think we can do that. You naturally got cross-shopping with domestics and GM, within GM brands, and we feel like the reason we're doing it is we're going to really strengthen Cadillac, Chevy, Buick, and GMC, and be able to, first stabilize that share. That'll be a big thing to do because you can look at our market share. It's been basically a linear drop for 30 years. Tiny little aberrations, but it's been 0.6 of a share point. And by the way, Ford's the same, Chrysler's the same, but we've got to flatten it. I'm not one of those ones that, hey, we're going to gain 5 points of share next year. Let's flatten it, okay? And then we'll worry about moving it up at some point.
The good news is you sold Saturn. The bad news is, I think, for you guys, maybe you sold it to Roger Penske.
Yeah.
This guy's going to come back and club you guys over the head with that.
Well, there's a chance that we could have, kept a competitor in business, but... for both Saturn and Hummer, and Saab actually too, but not as much because the origination of the Saab network was a different thing. But Saturn and Hummer were picked from the very best GM dealers. So the guys that have the Hummer and Saturn franchise own a lot of other GM stores. Joe Serra here and Dave Fisher here in the Detroit market as an example, have multiple GM stores and have some of the competitive brands. We felt like an opportunity to keep the brand in place and importantly give those dealers a chance to maintain their businesses, maintain their people, their presence in the market, not get into, cross, a lot of them have their mortgages, cross-collateralized and other things. We felt that was more important than taking a chance on a competitor downstream that might take a few sales from us. And hey, the competition's so fierce now, one more ain't going to, we're going to have eventually the Chinese here, the Indians here. Bring it on. There's going to be a lot of competitors.
Your column yesterday was on Hello Fritz.
Dear Fritz. Yes.
Here's the new GM.
Well, what he needed to do, job one, is, and Mark sent me a note, a lot
that
of
on that one yet? That was yesterday. I sent you the note.
Yeah,
it was okay.
A lot of the GM loyalists. Traditionally, I've preached since doing Auto Extreme. It's like the domestics have to go after import-oriented consumers, and they still do. Absolutely, you got to go where you aren't, and you got to get those people. But GM's got a situation now where I think the image has taken such a brutal hit, and their core, let's say, enthusiasts, for GM. I mean, people who've invested their lives, their careers, you know, they still buy, you know, two or three cars, you know, every couple of years, whatever. Those people feel alienated and, you know, angry. I get a lot of email from GMers who feel that way. So I felt that if Frisk is going to have to address that, he's going to have to, and Mark, they're going to have to go back and get these people. And I don't know how you do that because there's a lot of bad feelings out there, but they got to get those people back on board because, you know, they're advocates for the brand or for the company.
Sure.
And you need that. You need those people out there. And a lot of those people, just going by the email we get, are really kind of, they're hurt and they're disappointed. And GM loses those people. That's bad.
Well, there was a Wall Street Journal article about, you know, they haven't been your best friends. You know that. About 3 years ago that said GM could kill the pensions of all the retirees. But what would that do? You have so many sales, you know. You screwed my parents. I'm a 50-year-old whose parents are still alive who are GM, and you screwed them and their pension. Everybody knows 11 people, right? So I'm going to tell everybody I'm angry. And your sales at one point were pretty high on family and friends and so forth.
Yeah.
How do you go after what Peter's talking about to get the people back in the fold for the GM loyalists, that it's part of their life being a GM family?
Yeah, the you know, obviously in this process, we talked about the dealers earlier, but, you know, as I said, you know, it's been a lot of pain and sacrifice spread all through the you know, the entire extended GM family, including suppliers and retirees. And now the basic retirees, you know, the pension is funded both on the hourly and salary side. You know, executive retirees that got clipped, and
that,
obviously health care and other things.
That got
you know, so
almost.
none of that is easy. But I could tell you, I think you know where we landed in bankruptcy. You know, is, you know, if you really think about it, part of the problem is, you know, throughout decades, did we change fast enough, or was there this fundamental belief that it's just so big, it'll keep percolating along, it's too big to fail, got to take care of everybody. And the deck, you know, obviously that's proven to be wrong. We weren't too big to fail. You know, we failed. And I think if we're able, which I'm really confident what we're going to do, is create a new GM with, you know, four great brands and a clean balance sheet, a much leaner, faster organization, and we become a really good company again, I think most of the stuff takes care of itself. But in the meantime, somebody that got the, you know, benefits cut, pay, there's nothing you're going to say. Just like the dealers were winding down. I sent him a letter yesterday. I said, there's nothing I can say to make you feel better.
Yeah.
You know, but all we can do is what we know is the right thing and try to rebuild a good company. That's all we can do. That's really what Fritz has everybody focused on.
What's the mood inside the tubes, Peters?
It's you know, it's pretty good. I think, well, for one thing, we had our best month of the year in May, and June's tracking well ahead of May. You always feel better, especially me, when we're selling some cars.
What do you make of that? I mean, because here everyone's here in doom and gloom. The company declares bankruptcy, which not too long ago was supposedly going to be the kiss of death, and now you're saying June's going to be better than May.
I got my own theories. A couple of things. First of all, I think the underlying economy is actually starting to firm up.
Mm-hmm.
Consumer confidence is the biggest correlation to sales. It's still historically low, but it's improved 4 months in a row. Credit's flowing a little bit better, but I actually think when we filed, a couple of things, a complicated answer. Chrysler going out in front of us a month, and everybody's seeing how quick that happened, government involved, you know, nothing stopped, everybody's warranty got handled, and cars shipped, and the world didn't blow up, that helped us. Then I think there was so much uncertainty that actually us filing, and, you know, the administration, Obama come out saying what they said, that the DIP financing was available and they're financing a new company. Here's going to be the ownership structure of a new company. I actually think it lifted some uncertainty. And then finally, we did what Peter suggests we do in the column, is this month we have terrific programs for our owners. We got a great loyalty program and, you know, underlying pretty good incentives, and you can plus it up with the GM. We have a special GM card, you know, to use the points, what we call Bandbuster. And we know that kind of works, and we felt like we really had to throw our arms around our customers at this point. And it's a pretty good month. It's actually a very good month going on.
Oh, yeah. Jason's handing me his phone here. What about cash for clunkers? The Senate passed it today.
The Senate passed it.
90, what did we say, 91 to 5?
Yeah.
I didn't get all the details yet. I don't know if it's the version. There's like a $4 billion version and a $1
billion. This is the $1 billion version.
Yes, I'm not too sure about this one.
Yeah,
I got to get the details. Any of it's good.
Right.
The only thing I worry about is that the public ends up thinking it's really good and it's not doesn't start until October or something and they delay purchase. I worry about that.
That happened in the U.K.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, car sales came to a crashing halt for 2 weeks.
Well, for, you know, 3,500 euro or whatever it was, right. I would have too. I would have hung out.
You think it's going to do much, though? I mean, you know, because this applies to cars that are 8 years old or older. And there are people who will buy a car, keep it for 8 or 10 years, and go buy a new one. But most people driving 8-year-old cars or older just don't buy new cars. And $3,500 or $4,500 still isn't going to get them in a new one.
Yeah, and I got to look at all the details of the program. But, you know, $3,500, $4,500, it will have some effect, even with 8-year and older cars. The version I saw was newer cars would have been eligible, but they had to have a 10-mile-per-gallon increase, and I'm not sure what version got passed.
We'll have to see the final details.
And from what I understand, this one isn't as good as what I think, like the House proposal. I don't remember what I saw, but we dissected, and about 80% of our lineup was eligible. You know, would have been theoretically eligible, so we're pretty excited. And I think anything you do is good. I'm just worried about, you know, customer getting confused and putting off purchasing, thinking something really terrific's coming, and it's, you know, it's modest or what have you.
That'll probably happen because, I mean, this thing's been dragging on forever.
So your new campaign is Cash for Clunkers now?
We're not waiting.
I've said many times, Jason, I would put on a chicken suit and stand out in front of the dealerships if that's what it took to sell a car. We'll try anything.
Hey, okay, next week, we'll be on
Mark
site.
Mark in a chicken suit. Hey, one thing that's been all over is what about the G8 as an Impala SS? That's all over the web. It's all over Twitter. We got all kinds of questions about it.
Yeah, I mean, we did get a, you know, Mark Royce runs our Australian operations.
Holden.
And he's a terrific car guy, as you know. And he actually showed me that idea. And it's bouncing around. It's something that's being looked at. The financials of these, bringing these in right now from Australia, you know, the G8 and what have you, they're, how should I put it, they're profit challenged under the current exchange and economic environment. So I'm not sure that's going to happen, but it's something Mark, it's actually an idea Mark had, and it makes a nice police car, makes a terrific, performance sedan, so it's something we would look at, but long, long way from being, true or a done deal. Hmm.
So, Mark, this week, Ed Pieper went down to Charlotte to deliver some bad news to your NASCAR teams.
Yeah.
But so far, not much news has come out of that. What I've heard is Hendrick is going to, you know, they're going to have some cutbacks, but they're still your principal NASCAR team. Can you shed any more light on that?
Well, in general,
just between us.
Yeah. In general, Peter, I would say that, you know, our investment in a lot of areas of promotion over the, you know, we've been cutting pretty dramatically before this in a lot of areas. And some of the stuff that used to be nice to do, we just can't afford to do. Unless we can really get a hard ROI. I'm not speaking about NASCAR because actually NASCAR has pretty good ROI. But, you know, some of the, you know, sponsorships of some, various local teams and different things, you know, we've had to really take a hard look at, you know, do these really pay back? And even when they do, some of them we can't afford it. I mean, a dollar's a dollar; it's fungible. So, we're gonna reduce our financial exposure. We do still believe, you know, very strongly in NASCAR. The fans are terrific; they're incredibly loyal to GM. A lot of them are truck buyers. We've got great teams. We got great drivers. They do a terrific job for us. They're big advocates. It's still a monster sport, but like many other things we've been talking about, we just can't afford to be in there to the level we were in there before.
So Corvette Racing just won the 6th 24-hour Le Mans in 10 seasons. They're scheduled to come back and switch over to the GT2 category, right, which is going to be the new global GT category.
Right. It happens mid-Ohio, I think.
And yeah, in August. Is that continuing?
Yeah, we're going to switch to the GT2 class.
Because there was some consternation that that the plug might be pulled on Corvette Racing, I hope.
No, that's not going to happen.
No, that's good, because believe me, that's going out on the web right now, because I've just been inundated with people saying, boy, they're not going to be that stupid, are they?
No, we switched. It's really the marketing program for Corvette is the race program.
Right.
And they've been unbelievably successful.
Well, also the direct transference of technology.
And that's worked great for us,
which makes Corvette Racing...
And we think the GT2, you know, to get in there for a while. Now, who knows what we'll do 3, 4, 5 years from now, you know, because we were looking to go the other way, too. But GT2 is more street ready, right?
Well, you're also going directly against BMW, Porsche.
See, I think that's a real sweet spot for us. So we're looking forward to that. And, you know, that would be the plan for this year and then obviously for 2010. And I think it's for the credentials of Corvette. In Chevrolet, which we really need to improve in Chevy passenger cars and sports cars in terms of our market presence. Chevy Racing's, Corvette Racing's a big deal to us. It's one of the best programs in the company. And, you know, you actually know better than I, but in all of racing, it's one of the premier, premier properties.
Yes, that's good to hear.
Should we prompt our little guess, our pool here on GM bankruptcy?
Well, we're going to get to that later. Yeah, we'll get
to
that. He offered it too. Hey, Mark, what do you make of Chrysler making its brand managers CEOs with P&L responsibility? I find that a fascinating move.
Yeah, it's. I haven't had a chance to really digest it, and actually, I think I know mainly. I'm not even sure I knew the other ones.
Acavetti was the head of Dodge. Okay. And Manley was the head of international, and Manley's a good friend of mine.
I've met him.
Great move for him. And yeah, these guys have some power now. And what's it, Ray?
The third guy is a guy named Peter Fong, who was doing like
Ford
regional Lincoln Mercury stuff on the East Coast. And he went to Chrysler a year ago. And I've talked to people at Chrysler. Nobody there even seems to know who he is. And now, bang, this guy is the CEO of the Chrysler brand.
See, the guys I knew there, I know Jim Press, but I knew Landry. Knew Gary Diltz. I knew the guys that had my job up there. And so a lot of the gang I don't really know anymore. You know what's hard when you do that is just glancing at what I saw inside a big company then is – how much do you put resources directly under, because then they become redundant, okay? So then, at some point, you look across the three brands. This is what GM blew up back in the 80s. We had, when I hired in at Cadillac, we had manufacturing, engineering, finance,
Yeah, but that's back when GM was great. I personally believe that dismantling that was one of the things that led to GM's downfall.
John, it's a good point because... I mean, some of the redundancy you had to get rid of, but one of the things I think at GM and something we've been talking a lot lately about moving forward, how we can make decisions and what's our culture really going to be and how people going to relate to each other. And one of the things at GM is when we would do things, we would swing the pendulum too far. So you had redundancy of the divisions back in the 70s and the 80s. So in fixing it, instead of just getting the redundancy out, we just blew them up, So it swings all the way over to, everything's handled centrally. And then let's go global. Boom, we really go global. And so we got to, I think, be smart enough to, make these big moves. Let's dial them in and not overcorrect. So I'll be interested to see how it happens. What I don't know is every dealership has all three brands, right? They all have Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge. So... how's that all going to work? And I'm assuming that these three will somehow figure that out and talk to each other. But, they're getting sold through the same channel. So they all going to have three different incentive programs every month? Or will there be redundant models and, price, how they're going to figure out pricing? And There'd have to be some coordination, and I guess they all report right to Sergio. I can't imagine
those
him.
Those are all good points.
Yeah, I
don't
can't imagine Sergio weighing in on a 0-for-60 this month, or maybe he will. I don't know, but
he'd be like,
I don't know how that works, but it's interesting.
I heard Sergio was smoking in the design dome.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a new company now, so
right,
you know. All the hand-wringers will just have to sort of shut up.
Hey, you just mentioned a key word, culture. And that's everybody's starting to weigh in on this now. Can GM change its culture? Can the guys who grew up in the GM system change the culture? Or do they need all new management in there? What's your take on that?
Well, I got an interest. We don't have enough time. I got an interest to take. I think a lot of the perception of the people in the company from the outside, from a culture. I think a lot of it's just inaccurate to begin with. Most of the management team is about my age, and I'm 50 years old. We didn't come into the company. We've been fighting our ass off from the day we hired in. It wasn't like we were big, great General Motors. From the day I hired in at Cadillac, we've been fighting, we've been sliding in Mercedes and BMW and later on Lexus. So none of us, this arrogance that we get painted with, I'm sure it existed. I've never seen it. Now, what we did have, though, was a culture of slow decision making, not being crisp. And then I think the other thing was that a lack of accountability. And I kind of, in some ways, and I think a lot of improvements have been made. I think Fritz will make even more. I think it's because of the GM thing, okay? Because GM's not a brand. But the consumer brands, are, as we know, Chevy, Cadillac, GMC, Buick, currently Hummer, Saab, Saturn as well. And so I think most of the people work for GM. They don't work for a brand. And so you kind of get lost in this. It's like you're in this never land of like corporate, and you're not really tied to a consumer brand. And I really think a lot of things that we've done of late, we're going to address that. And I get a sneaking suspicion Fritz will address even more. But I think that's a big piece of it. Is a really clear accountability where you're linked to the consumer brand. You're in having four now. We'll be able to do this, and you're working from the customer back, not from manufacturing capacity out, and that stuff's all changing.
6 weeks ago or so, we were talking, should GM change its name?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
There was an article in one of the newspapers a couple days ago.
Yep.
With the talk of that. What's your view? Should GM change its name? And let's not trip you up. I said keep GM because you don't have any brands named GM. I know from my Chrysler days, right, whenever there's bad news about Chrysler, it crapped all over the Chrysler brand.
Right.
And you don't have that. Do you remember where you were?
I wrote the column about it, but shocked John. He was just like, you got to be kidding me.
I was totally shocked because Peter bleeds GM blood.
Bill Mitchell, Bunky Newton, Zara Duntoff, Ed Cole, those guys are history book figures to people, but they were in our driveway, But I could see a scenario where GM is sort of subdued and the four, brands are pushed forward.
That's going to happen under any circumstances.
But, realistically, spending money on renaming GM in the media saturated world we live in today, it's almost like how do you do that? Yeah. It would be, I'd rather spend my money on Chevrolet, Buick, Cadillac, GMC.
Where were you?
I think I said keep it.
Yeah.
And but my question, Mark, is why are you guys advertising GM right now? You got this whole campaign. I can't remember what it's called, Transition or something. And
we're off the map. And no, I'm just kidding.
We don't suck.
To be completely honest.
I don't get it.
No, Jason, right, that wasn't very nice.
That's the meet up Mark section.
reason we did it is... and I want to be real clear about it because Peter kind of had it. We really don't want to talk about GM. I don't like to do GM advertising. We want to talk about our four brands. We don't sell GMs. But this has been big news. It's been negative news. You think about the negative news cycle we've been in for really, because we got in trouble back in 05. And there's been bankruptcy rumors basically and then actual outright bankruptcy for 4 years. And
well, there's been serious bad news.
Well, you've written about the negative news.
For you know, 7 months.
Right.
Solid.
Oh, the last seven months has been unreal.
We felt like this wasn't going to be a bankruptcy that nobody knew about, okay? And it's not like when Northwest went out, because you only had to trust them for, like, you
next
know,
week?
For an hour, you know, on your flight to New York. You know,
for a few $100, right.
Right. And, you know, so we felt like we had to address it, like we couldn't hide from it. And we didn't want to spend, you know, we don't want to do it forever. In fact, I think we're about done advertising it. But we wanted to get out there and say, hey, look, it happened. And, you know, in a real narrow way, here's what we're trying to fix. Fewer better strategy, fewer stronger brands. And we're not the first company it's happened to, and we plan to be around. And it was part of the loyalty program. We had, Fritz has open letters that we've had in his ads. Reassure our customers, reassure our stakeholders. And we want to get on to the... the business of the four channels as soon as possible, because there's no real upside in talking about GM, but there's very strong linkage of GMC, Cadillac, Chevy, and Buick to GM. And, you know, so you can't hide from it. So we felt, let's deal with it and then quickly transition. Although, in research, some people do not get that GMC is part of GM.
Is that right?
Wait, we'll get 10% of people miss that.
Well, what about the little badges on the car that say GM?
It's up to me. I get them off.
Yeah.
It's up to me. It's not completely. I could see logic. It was done because the products have been so vastly improved the last few years that we wanted people to realize they were coming from GM. Mm. I mean, that was the logic behind it. And so,
come off then?
Well, I don't know. That's not completely my call, but I would assume at some point we'll probably pull those off.
It goes back to the 70s when I was a little kid. When you get into any GM car, whether it was a Pontiac or an Oldsmobile or a Chevy, and the seatbelt buckle
had GM on it. Yeah,
yeah.
GM mark of excellence.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Had the Fisher Body Coach on the rockers.
Yep. Yeah.
We've talked about it. You know, see, to me, I think you said, or I forget who said it, I wouldn't change, if you were going to change it at all, and I'm not advocating for that one way or another, a lot of people that I really respect think we should, and other people I respect think we should, I would only change it to like Chevrolet, if you were going to change it. You know, just, then you're lining up with the way Toyota is, and Honda is, and Ford is, with your foundational brand, the name of the company, and that way when Fritz walks out, he's representing Chevrolet, you know, because... You know, if you keep it GM, you're still going to have a lot of GM discussion, and that could be good or bad. I think if we really turn things around, which we plan on doing, it'd be a good thing. And so we'll
then
see.
You can put the badges back on that.
Yeah, there's pros and cons to it.
You
but to me, I would never change it.
Badges.
To, you know, I wouldn't change it to some other name. You know, Global Motors or something.
American
I
mean, Motors.
Be, Renzo
you keep it the
Motors.
Same, or call it Chevrolet, as far as one person's opinion.
Just as long as it's not Fu King Motors.
Right. Auto Extremist Motors.
Mark doesn't remember the April Fool's column, but that's okay.
Did you see it?
Fuki, I think I remember that. Yeah.
When we announced
that. I remember that.
Jason was my PR.
New head of PR at Fuki King. What was the first model? The Fuki King Brilliant?
Now we need a few drinks.
Yeah. All right, host. A lot of dead space here.
Yeah, no, we've got some dead space. Hey, we had a guy on, I'm sure you know, Jim Dollinger, sells more Buicks than anybody in the world. He's got a whole manifesto of how to turn GM around. In my book, when you got a great sales guy or gal, you give them everything they can take. Why not take what this guy's suggesting what to do?
Well, I've been through his plan, and, some of the stuff is... some of the stuff is smart, and some of it we've actually done. I mean, it's not like all the ideas were unique to him. I can't remember some of it now. It was things like don't charge for transportation fee.
Right.
It was things like that. A lot of it, what works here in Detroit doesn't necessarily translate to L.A. or other places. And guy's been a he's been a successful salesperson, and you know, it's not like we don't take dealer input. We got 700 dealers and managers that work on our various councils. They got tons of ideas. They're the closest to the customer, a lot closer than we are in many cases. And you know, a lot of suggestions on how we go to market, how we advertise, how we run our incentive programs, we get from direct dealer input, and we spend a ton of time with them. So you know, it's you know, one guy, one vote. You know, he thinks that I'm incompetent, that my predecessor was incompetent, that Rick is was incompetent, that you know, it'll just be a matter of time before he'll think Fritz is incompetent. I mean, he's got a very specific point of view. He's entitled to it. You know, he does a lot of blogging. He's got about 10 aliases. He blogs against himself. Okay, he starts blogging, and then he'll argue with himself, and it's all him. You know, so. You know, there's always going to be critics. They're always going to be with us.
Well, I always felt that he'd have gotten a lot farther with you guys if he didn't criticize you guys personally. But it seems to me he's got some pretty terrific ideas.
Well,
that's just my reaction.
I always have a problem with dealers that criticize the company publicly because in the end, they're turning the gun right on themselves because the public reads and go, well, I'm not going to buy a car from that company because people believe that the dealer is owned by the car company, that there's not individual franchise agreements. So it's
well, they've all learned in the last month now. I mean, a lot of people have learned a whole lot more about franchise laws. But you're right, Jason. To them, the dealership is the face of the company.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, you know, that's a big piece of it, too, because, you know, the reason we're going through the dealer restructuring is to make the dealer stronger. And because believe me, it's a painful thing to go through. So you wouldn't take this on unless you really felt like, you know, in line with restructuring everything else. Do we think that we got a perfect dealer footprint? Well, we've got great dealers in all over the country, but not all of them are. And, you know, in the local market, you know, in Greenwich, Connecticut, the Chevy dealer, that's Chevy in that market. That's the brand in that market. And if our dealer is not taking care of the customers and in a substandard facility that hasn't been fixed up in 30 years and the Toyota store next door is big and gorgeous and doing a lot of volume and take care of a customer, we can't compete with that. And that's why we're doing this, so that we can get to a model where our dealers can compete, where we can have good locations, up-to-date branded facilities. They can afford to train their people, advertise in their market, take care of their customers. That's why you do it. You do it not for us. You do it to improve the dealers. So then that helps us. It helps the company because then we attract the best entrepreneurs. We attract private capital. And that's why you take this kind of a thing on, because it's been interesting.
Interesting is...
It's been painful. I'll tell you guys one story.
Brutal.
And we went by scores. So I had a very good friend. I spent my whole career in the field, basically, with the dealers. Very good friend of mine. Dealer, I won't mention where he is. And I knew the place, and he had let it got run down over the years, and his scores were under. And, you know, we didn't make any exceptions. So that letter went out. That same day, his 37-year-old daughter died of a heart attack. I mean, I had him on the phone. He cried for an hour on the phone. It's been hard. You guys can see it. I mean, it's torn my guts out. But to think that we could restructure every part of the business and leave that alone, we wouldn't have been doing the right thing for, you know, the other people involved, for our shareholders, for the owners, for the future of the business. We had to take that on. So, you know, we did it the best we possibly could, as fair as we possibly could. And, you know, we eventually will get the other side. And the dealers that are moving forward with us, they knew we had to do this. And, I mean, they're solidly behind.
Look, I've talked to dealers, too, who said, even the ones who got cut, who said, we knew this had to happen.
Well, you get them in a room, and you take them through it, and they all sit there and agree. And then at the end of the meeting, it says, as long as it's...
Yeah, well,
as long as the other guys...
The only ones
I've had 30 years of meetings with dealers. Every single one. You got too many dealers. I agree with you. Who wants to go out? Shit, no, not me, you know. So let him go.
That's right.
You know, and I mean, so that's what we basically got down to.
Right.
Oh, we said it.
No.
Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die.
That's a great line, Jason. That's the greatest line.
I'll
give you guys credit. I'll give you credit, Mark. The only ones who I know who are really bitching up a storm are the Chrysler dealers because they got screwed.
They got hosed.
They got hosed completely. And you guys have handled it a lot better. But, you know, listen to what you're saying. You've been busting your ass for 30 years, and it's been a downward slide since you came into the industry. Now, it's like a magic wand has been waved. Yeah, all your legacy costs are behind you.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the greatest opportunity GM and Ford and Chrysler have had in my career,
right.
In my entire career. I'm finally saying these guys now have a fighting chance.
Yeah, it's we feel the same way. And you know, we're fortunate. A lot of people don't get this chance. And without, I guess, you know, without the industry being so critically important and so tied into the overall economy and levels of employment, we probably wouldn't have been. And a lot of companies weren't, you know, that have gotten into financial trouble. And so we're grateful for it. We don't want to do it again. We don't want to go through this again. I can guarantee you that. So we're really trying to get it right, make the tough decisions, move incredibly fast. We really do have terrific plans. And if you're really deep inside of them in terms of, you know, how the financials line up and, you know, how we can, you know, begin to throw off cash and be profitable under, you know, historically weak industry conditions. So then the thing, if, you know, if the market improves, then there's so much leverage that we're really excited about it, too. And it's, you know, I think a lot of books will get written on what got us to this point. You know, a lot of the problems, I think, were self-inflicted. I think a lot of them were, you know, the result of a lot of other things, including the government that's now bailed us out, a lot of regulation that they did that, you know, and other things. You know, other countries, you just can't go walk in and compete like you can do here. I mean, they keep you out. Or you have to, you know, you have to build all, you have to locally source all your product or whatever. The United States, oh, come on in, everybody, you know, which is the way we are. It's fine. It's what makes us a great country. But there's a price to pay for that. And so a lot of these things have led us to where we're at. And I think the big problems that we shot ourselves in the foot with, we've corrected. And I think that'll start becoming apparent. Nothing breeds momentum like winning breeds winning. You know, and that four-year run we had when I was at Cadillac, I shouldn't have got paid. I had so much fun. I mean, our sales were, in fact, 3 years at Volvo before that. It's 7 straight years of sales increases, profit increases. And I've been paying paybacks are hell, right? What's the term?
That's paybacks the last 4 years. Bitch.
There you go. And, you know, because the last 4 years have been tough, but, you know, nobody's making money in the market right now. So it's not.
Hey, Toyota's losing more money than General Motors is right now. Honda's losing more money than Ford is right now.
Right.
I mean, you know,
that's that leverage I talked about. Nobody's immune.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, nobody is immune.
So, hey, it's been great having you here.
It's been great being here.
It's been, and you're free to stick
better.
Around.
Like,
you have
like,
to stick around. We got questions for
you. I feel like I was on a psychiatrist's couch here and been able to work through some. I've been able to work through some of my issues. Okay.
Mark, we're listening.
But this is rapid fire, right?
This is rapid fire.
That Peter?
No, it's Jason.
It's rapid fire. Okay, Jason, fire away, man.
Okay, this question's for Mark. Get the hell off the show now, Fritz Henderson.
Okay, boss.
No, a colleague of all of ours, Gene Halliday from.
Oh yeah,
from Gene.
Hey Gene.
What's up, Gene?
How much, Mark? How much did GM budget for ad spending during its expected 60 to 90 days in Chapter 11?
We budgeted on a per unit basis about the same as we have been spending. So, you know, it's, you know, $40-50 million a month.
That was specific, Gene. You're welcome.
Yeah.
And how involved was the task force in deciding the ad budget while Treasury was the debtor in possession?
The task force never got real specific on anything. So, you know, they would look at, you know, what are you spending per unit? What's your Chevy versus Toyota? Cadillac versus Mercedes, et cetera. You know, they looked at competitive benchmarks. They never prescribed number of dealers to be reduced, ad budgets, incentive budgets. That wasn't, they did due diligence. They didn't do micromanaging. So they really didn't have much to do at all with what the dip financing in terms of ad spending was.
It's already the best rapid fire.
Yeah.
Mike Cleary asks, is GM willing to let Saturn sell a rebadged G8 through its outlets since they apparently aren't interested in the car anymore?
Yeah, we covered that.
We already covered G8, yeah.
Yeah, but this is specific. Would you guys let Saturn sell it?
No.
No. Steven Schreier asks, what will the fuel economy of the Volt be when running on a gasoline range extender? I've heard both 30 and 50 miles per gallon.
I'm not sure it works exactly like that. It doesn't run down. The gas engine will kick in before you get to 40 miles per gallon, I think, the way the thing works. I mean, you could shut it off and go 40 miles on just the charge, but I believe it starts to come in the equivalents, I think it's somewhere over 100 miles per gallon.
Yeah, if you balance it out. But if it's just on pure gasoline, just running the engine, I believe it's 30.
Any real hard product questions? Technical? No. Ask John or...
Yeah.
Okay, Shelby from Kansas asked, by closing so many rural dealers, isn't GM and Chrysler basically ceding their market share to Ford?
The answer is no. We will still have a more extensive rural and hub town, medium-sized town network.
Wasn't it more in metro areas that you reduced dealers, not so much in the rural areas?
Well, we did. It was about equal, what we call rural, and then hub towns are, more of a medium size. Like Traverse City is a hub town. And then metro, it was about equally spread between the three. So we did cut some rural dealers. But, we kept our, when you look at state by state, there's like maybe two states in the country where Ford will have more dealers than us. We still will have the most extensive rural and hub town network. And we think it's a strength for GM.
Are you going to have GM service centers?
We may end up with, once the smoke clears here, and we're back to normal business and we see what we did here. Because remember, we went by performance metric. We didn't go arbitrarily. That's what Chrysler did. So we may end up with some geographic gaps that we'll either have to go back and put a dealer back in. Might even be the same dealer if they give us the right business plan, or put a service point in. Depends. And we may do some of that with Cadillac as well, because we actually eliminated quite a few Cadillac franchises where the Chevy dealer, he stayed, but he lost Cadillac.
Mm-hmm. All right, we got through three questions in 2 minutes. Let's start it again. Dave Ederer asked, is China more important to GM than Europe? It seems like the Europeans are more hostile to GM and the Chinese much more compliant.
I wouldn't say more important. It's certainly more profitable.
Yeah, I was going to say, that makes it more important.
But also, China is going to be the biggest car market for the foreseeable future, so... Yeah. Yeah. That sort of answers that.
Right.
This is one of our most loyal viewers with the incredible name on Twitter, Baldsack. You should get to know him. To LaNave, what steps is GM taking to improve access to capital for buyers and dealers' floor plans?
Well, for one thing, GMAC is getting a lot healthier now that they're a bank. They got access to deposits, which is the lowest cost funds, have had access to the various government funding. We've got a whole program with credit unions that, by the way, is at now 10% of our business runs through the credit unions. And I remember when I was young, my dad financed through the credit union, bought his car through the credit union, and all the 0% programs over the years forced them out. They love being back in the car business. So I would say GMAC is getting a lot healthier, credit unions and, banks and when the thing finally flips the other way, everybody's going to come. Car business is a great place for finance companies to be. A lot of money to be made. Very low risk. They'll come flying back in as soon as we kind of get through this deal.
Little controversy. I saw it a couple days ago. Dave Poole on Twitter asked, former GM exec Mike Jackson blasted the automaker's PowerPoint culture in a recent Ad Age article. Yeah. Any reaction to that?
Did he...
I could go through that letter that appeared in Automotive News.
Did you see what I wrote about it, Mark?
If he had 10 major points, they were all wrong.
Did you see what I wrote about it?
What'd you write?
On the table? I blasted him. He made a few good points, but the downside, the opposite side of Mike Jackson, he doesn't have anything to stand on.
Okay, Mark, how exactly has going bankrupt affected the reputation of GM in the mind of the consumer? And how will you use your marketing skills to change any negative perception that the bankruptcy may have caused? Again, this is from Fritz Henderson. It's actually from Phil.
Well, I think, we kind of talked about it here in the show. We, really, our divisional brands have held up remarkably well through the whole process. And really, that needs to be our focus, is the four brands. And, we're going to build those up. Just like anybody builds brands in this business, great product. And, market it as well as you possibly can.
Dennis Tomasi asks, who will be loaning Chrysler and GM money after screwing the bondholders and the government money dries up? No one.
Well, Fiat will have to fund Chrysler once the mm-hmm. once the money's paid back, right?
Let's see. We had a couple more here. What does GM's view of America say about where dealers should be located? They've been at this for 80 years. That's from Bald Sack again on Twitter.
Our view of America?
Uh-huh.
Well, we think we ought to have the most extensive, dealer network in the industry. We think that's a strength. So we will provide greater customer convenience from a geographic standpoint than anybody else.
If someone bought a GM car that was made prior to this bankruptcy and then got hurt in it, can they sue the new GM or would they be SOL?
I'm not sure that that's been entirely determined as we weave our way through this process. I can tell you that our dealers, who we've always indemnified against lawsuits on product issues, will continue to be indemnified, including the dealers that we're going to wind down.
Well, we know the Center for Auto Safety was miffed that the task force didn't set money aside for lawsuits.
Really?
Yeah. And, of course, the Center for Auto Safety is a front for the plaintiff attorneys.
You know, some of this gets rather interesting. But, I mean, part of what needs to be remembered here is we went bankrupt. And, you know, what happened to the dealers, in our case, the 1,350 that are being wound down, while very painful, in a regular bankruptcy, we got zero. It would all been treated like Chrysler, every dealer in the country. Which is really difficult, and I'm lucky to have a job. Normal bankruptcy, I'd probably be in the street, and a whole lot of other people as well. So
let me check my
very atypical.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You're good. You're good. Yeah.
Great.
You're good,
I'm
buddy.
For a while.
All right. While you're here, Am Soyeron asks, "What do you guys drive for your personal car?" Peter,
I have a 08 CTS Cadillac CTS.
I test drive everything. I've got
he's a journalist.
I'm a journalist, right? I've got a brand new Camaro RS V6 right out here in the parking lot. I've also got a 1968 Citroen DS, and we've got a PT Cruiser as a family car.
I drive a Caliber RT, and as I said many times on the show, proud owner of two Saturn Vues.
Right, Mark, what are you driving?
Right now, driving an Escalade Platinum. I drive everything at work, competitive cars included.
Aveos?
I don't drive them for long, but I drive them. Drive them out at the test track.
You're an Escalade kind of guy.
Okay, our next gen Aveo is really strong. But my wife has an Enclave. I got a '79 Hessen Eisenhardt Coupe de Ville convertible, and love that. And at work, I drive a little bit of everything.
Harlan Lubrasauer asks, what is the current state of cellulosic ethanol? Are researchers any closer to bringing it to mass market?
Yeah, how about Cascada? You guys, where the hell's that Cascada ethanol?
Ethanol is something I could go on for a long time, too, because I really believe in that's a big piece of the equation here, the alternative fuels. I have lost track of where we are.
You've had some other things to work on lately, right?
Some other stuff happening. But I really believe alternative fuels are a piece of this equation. Not the answer.
Oh, I disagree. Not, I think they are the answer.
Maybe. But I hope so. I'm not guaranteeing they're the answer. I know they're part of the answer for sure. And they may be the whole answer.
Yeah.
But you got to figure out a way that they're not, going to draw down foodstuffs. They got to be made out of waste products.
And hence the cellulosic, the Cascada stuff.
Really,
you make it out of garbage.
Out of garbage with
I think
bacteria.
That's going to be ultimately more than half.
I think so, too.
Two-thirds of our energy supplies.
Absolutely. You think about it, it makes perfect sense. I mean, if you were to write a science fiction novel about how the world's powering itself 50 years from now, it would be using waste products to generate energy. That's what you write. So I think we'll get there. Eventually, somebody smart. It won't be me, but I mean.
Okay, loyal viewer, MudMonster37 asks, with Fiat and Chrysler reliability both awful, what will happen now? Will it get better or worse?
Well, number one, Fiat, we all know the joke. Fix it again, Tony. But if you look at how Fiat's been doing in Europe lately, it's been pretty good. And, Chrysler gets a bad rap for being under the industry average, but there's a bunch of surprising brands under the industry average, too, and they don't get trashed. Yeah. A number of Japanese brands that are not very good if you go by the J.D. Power initial quality or right. CSI or anything like that.
I mean, the levels of quality now are so, you know, they're well, so
let's,
high.
Let's put it this way.
I mean, the worst vehicles in quality are really good.
Right, and that's what I'm getting at is Chrysler, I'm going to guess, and, you know, J.D. Power keeps changing their survey every few years, so you can't really go back and compare all that easily. I'll bet you Chrysler's level of quality is at least where Toyota was 10 years ago.
No, it's where Toyota was 5 or 6 years ago.
Really? Okay.
I think so. I think it'd be
accurate. If you thought Toyotas were good 5 years ago, Chrysler's are good.
Lars2885 on Twitter asks, service departments at dealers did good business. The remaining dealers won't have the capacity to take it all. How will that sort out? I think they'll have the capacity.
Yeah, they'll have plenty of capacity. You got to remember, our dealer system was put into place in the really right after World War II, us, Ford, and Chrysler. And they broke up the distributorships and became dealerships. The three of us at that point had 98% market share, or probably 99%. And, you know, that basic system is what we have today. So, you know, the Chrysler restructured, no surprise that we restructured. I can tell you we absolutely had to do it. If this happens to Ford, guess what? They'll restructure too. So, I mean, these systems were put in. It was small town America then. The suburbs didn't even exist. Now to where all the car buyers now, in the suburbs. Okay, so our dealerships weren't situated correctly. These are all things we've been fixing. And, you know, this process that we're going through now, you know, gave us a unique chance to kind of, you know, make a quantum leap in that regard.
I'm going to end it with a fun one. This is
perfect.
In your opinion, name the worst auto executive ever. This is from Fritz Henderson. No, this is from Artemis 77. The worst, we'll let you start. Who's the worst auto executive ever?
Come back.
There's a murderer's row of bad car executives.
You got to name one.
John?
I'm thinking. I'm racking my brain right now. I mean, to say this is the worst, it didn't work, it was...
there are legions
I will
of
say,
bad ones.
I will say, just because I'm forced to pick a name, I'll say Ron Zarella. I think what he did not work at all.
I'm not a big fan of John Smale's tenure at General Motors, and I'm really not a big fan of Robert Nardelli.
So name one. Split the baby.
Nardelli.
We don't like to end on a negative. I'll give you mine. Jerry Myers. Love the guy, but he was quoted yesterday in the paper by this lazy cadre of journalists. I love the guy. Spoke at his class at the University of Michigan during the Firestone crisis. He drove American Motors into the ditch, wrote a crappy book, and now he's quoted. Every journalist in town, they call him, and he'll say whatever you want him to say. But a disaster. Good to see you, Jerry.
Yeah.
I'm not naming names.
That's okay.
I said, everyone's a critic. I'm not going to be one. I will say, though. You know, when the domestic industry got in trouble, kind of the thought, now, did management make mistakes? Yeah, all over the place, okay? Just like a lot of places. But the thought that every dumb person in America went to work at Ford and Chrysler and GM at the exact same time,
yeah,
is a ludicrous thought. I mean, a lot of forces at work here. Yep.
And the other thing that drives me nuts is the people who, you know, I've been immersed in this business since I was a kid. The thing that drives me crazy, and I know it drives you guys crazy, the people writing stuff who've never worked in the business, have never lived around here, they don't know what it's like, they don't know the people. You're absolutely right.
Probably never driven, don't have a car right now.
Yeah, but
you know how many times I've answered the question, when is GM going to make cars that people want to buy?
Oh, yeah, I mean, come on. Yeah.
Said, yesterday?
How about every month for the last 50 years we've sold more cars and more Americans? When did the law come out that people had a gun held to their head? They bought them because they liked them.
Right.
They wanted to buy them. You know, we'd like to sell more, damn right. You know, but come on. But I think once, like I said, guys, winning takes care of all this. You know,
yeah.
You get some success, all of a sudden, everybody loves your advertising. Your wife thinks you're better looking. You know, your golf game's better. So you know, just you got to get the other side, which we plan on doing.
Okay, let's wrap it up here then. We've got one last thing. Everybody who's watching right now, we're having a contest. In fact, Jason, go through some of the.
You get so much good
swag that we
have. You get so much. You get a Autoline hat. This is a high quality hat with a 10-year pin. Okay. You get an Autoline T-shirt. You get a cup. You get the shrink wrap T-shirt. You get a look back at John's most provocative interviews. I think there's one in here.
Yeah.
You get an Auto Extremist T-shirt, which is I'm going to steal one of these. I've got the hat. You got to predict the day that General Motors officially comes out of bankruptcy.
No, not to pick the day. How many days will it take? How long will GM be in bankruptcy?
Well, you've got to pick the date to figure out the number.
Yes, you do.
How many days will GM
what
be
day
in bankruptcy?
What day are we doing? June 1st or 2nd?
June 1st.
June
1st.
So if they
the
come out
day.
August 15th?
Well, here's what I predicted it would be.
36 days, right?
I predicted 75 days. Peter predicted 77 days. Jason predicted 120 days. And Tom Walsh, who was on the show when we first did this, said 64 days. And you know what? I think he's the closest so far.
There could be an anonymous phone call to headquarters or to Treasury saying that things aren't right there at General Motors. I didn't know.
And then we've got a bunch. Ben, I don't know if you can put up the other graph that has everybody else who's entered so far.
I think it's going to be pretty fast.
Okay, we don't have that
at least
one.
I hope so.
We have a number of people who have entered, and I think
Fritz has entered 7 times.
I think Fritz should come on the show.
I think you should
get him.
But
yeah,
I
ask
think
him to come on.
The 75 days that I picked, I think it's going to go shorter than that. I wish I could change my vote, but I locked
it. I can't
it.
Wait to the victory party in September when I'm just looking like a genius.
And then just a few things to wrap up here too. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at twitter.com/autoline. You can follow Peter at twitter.com/autoextremist. You can follow everything at GM at twitter.com/GMblogs.
That's right.
One word together. And then we got to talk about Forgotten Harvest because we didn't get a picture of the truck that you guys have got.
Last 2 weeks ago, we got our fifth truck from Daimler or Daimler Chrysler to help us pick up food. Refrigerated trucks. We have 21 now at Forgotten Harvest. We go out every day. We pick up the food from Kroger's and all these wonderful
stores. Here we go.
Look
on the screen. We got the
There's
truck
the,
up there.
We broke
That's
through.
That's awesome.
That's a Daimler. It's a Freightliner. It has the most high-tech cold storage system. It's a cold plate in the back. In fact, they're using this as a test from the guys at Johnson Refrigerated Beds. We can go from 35 degrees to zero in 20 minutes in case we ate. Or picking up.
You find a body on the road? No, I mean, you find some food.
Well, it is Detroit. This is wonderful. Go to www.forgottenharvest.org. Every dollar you give, we feed 6 people tomorrow. If you're not in the Detroit area, find out where a food bank is, a rescue or a food bank, and help out. There's a lot of hungry people in this country right now. And seriously, a few dollars can really help some people that are starving, especially kids and elderly. So thank you.
Cool.
I tell you, Jason, the stuff you do with every charity I feel like I've ever been involved in, I'm involved in a bunch with autism, and I brought my son here tonight. He does pretty well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And I don't know how the hell you find time. I mean, you're amazing, because everyone I've been ever been involved in, I've seen you or you've been involved or trying to help out, and
it's
unbelievable.
We're on the Judson Center board together.
Yep.
And
What's that?
It's a center for abused and neglected children and young mentally challenged adults. But the beautiful part, what we're doing right now, is an autism center.
Physical center. It's
and
gorgeous.
The LaNaves are
putting a lot of their own personal money into it, and
cool.
trying to help raise it to get it off the ground. And it's a wonderful thing. You know, autism is now one in every 100 kids.
One in every 69 boys.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we're going to have the center, go to judsoncenter.org and help out. These are wonderful organizations in the Detroit area. And by the way, if I can end on this, despite the one state depression that we're in, this is the most generous place on the face of the earth.
No,
and not as a native here.
Yeah.
This is my home. As I fundraise every day, I can believe, and I'm blown away by the generosity of the people in Metro Detroit.
It is a very generous state, and you know, so I think that's, and that's part of what I think drives all of us to get the company turned around, get the help, get, you know,
I need corporate money.
Yeah,
you know.
God, I mean,
bless. You know,
yeah, because yeah, the stories.
The people here, they deserve to have a vibrant economy and home ground, home turf companies they can be proud of that are successful, and that's entirely what we're focused on.
The last truck I got at Forgotten Harvest, or we got, I hate to say the I sound like Obama, don't I? The last truck that we got before this last one from Daimler was from General Motors. Under the wire before they really had to close down on corporate giving, but they gave us a truck, a $100,000 truck, and we're using that every day, and we'll deliver 850,000 meals in the 12 months because of General Motors. And
that's
we need General Motors back, and we need Ford back, and Toyota, Irv Miller, we need your money too, buddy.
Peter, you're going to say you get the last word here.
No, I was just saying, you know, the companies do so much for this town that to see them all down and everybody suffers, all the charitable
everybody.
Institutions, all the arts, you know, just take huge hits. And so we all hope it gets better.
Amen, bro. Hey.
John, just a second. Mark, why don't you introduce yourself? Thank you very much.
Hey, Drew, come here. My son Drew came with me.
Yeah.
Come here, buddy.
Seat.
Sit down right here. This is my son Drew. He's a twin.
A twin?
He's a twin. He's an identical twin. That's a microphone. And he's interested in how television works and production and plays. Right, Drew?
Right.
And,
I sure am.
And, Drew, why don't you tell everybody where you go to school?
I go to school at Eaton Academy.
Where's that at?
Birmingham.
There you go.
Yeah.
And it's a school for what's every kid there got?
Learning disabilities.
Or learning difference. And they do.
Disabilities, I mean difference.
There you go.
Yeah, right.
And they do a great job, right?
Right, they sure do.
Great teachers and.
Yeah.
What's your favorite topic?
Well, I guess science and math are.
All right.
Yeah.
Any bad?
And Chevy. Uh-huh.
And Chevy, right?
Right.
Okay.
Oh, you mean for school, though?
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
Science and math.
Yeah.
In recess?
Well, actually, I don't. Well, activity's kind of different now.
Okay.
But okay.
Well, thanks for coming with me, Drew.
You're welcome.
Did you enjoy it? Did you learn anything?
You want me to tell you the truth?
No, that's a good way to end this show. John, thanks for having us on.
Bye.
Visit our website, outoflinedetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with Out of Line Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Out of Line Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at outoflinedetroit.tv.
Orange, purple, silver, and blue, change of frequency.